will be useful to give a very brief outline of the main factors operative and producing dreams. For a detailed study of the whole matter, the student is referred to that excellent textbook, Dreams by C.W. Leadbeater, from which the following facts are extracted. The factors concerned in the production of dreams are 1. The lower physical brain, with its infantile semi-consciousness, and its habit of expressing every stimulus in pictorial form. Page 97. To the etheric part of the brain, through which sweeps a ceaseless procession of disconnected pictures. 3. The astral body, palpitating with the wild surgings of desire and emotion. 4. The ego, in the causal body, who may be in any state of consciousness, from almost complete insensibility to perfect command of his faculties. When a man goes to sleep, his ego withdraws further within himself, and leaves his various bodies more free than usual to go their own way. These separate bodies, 1, are much more susceptible of impressions from without than at other times, and, 2, have a very rudimentary consciousness of their own. Consequently, there is ample reason for the production of dreams, as well as for confused recollections in the physical brain of the experiences of the other bodies during sleep. Such confused dreams may thus be due to 1. A series of disconnected pictures and impossible transformations produced by the senseless automatic action of the lower physical brain. 2. A stream of casual thought which has been pouring through the etheric part of the brain. 3. The ever-restless tide of earthly desire, playing through the astral body and probably stimulated by astral influences. 4. An imperfect attempt at dramatization by an undeveloped ego. 5. A mingling of several or all of these influences. We will briefly describe the principal elements in each of these kinds of dreams. 1. Physical brain dreams. When in sleep, the ego, for the time, resigns control of the brain, the physical body still has a certain dim consciousness of its own, and in addition there is also the aggregate consciousness of the individual cells of the physical body. The grasp of the physical consciousness over the brain is far feebler than that of the ego over the brain, and consequently purely physical charges are capable of affecting the brain to a very much greater extent. Examples of such physical changes are irregularity in the circulation of the blood, indigestion, heat and cold, etc. Page 98. The dim physical consciousness possesses certain peculiarities. 1. It is to a great extent automatic. 2. It seems unable to grasp an idea except in the form in which it is itself an actor. Consequently, all stimuli, whether from within or from without, are immediately translated into perceptual images. 3. It is incapable of grasping abstract ideas or memories, as such, but at once transforms them into imaginary percepts. 4. Every local direction of thought becomes for it an actual spatial transportation, that is, a passing thought of China would transport the consciousness instantly in imagination to China. 5. It has no power of judging the sequence, value or objective truth of the pictures that appear before it. It takes them all just as it seems them, and never feels surprised at anything which may happen, however incongruous or absurd. 6. It is subject to the principle of association of ideas, and consequently images, unconnected except by the fact that they represent events which happened near to one another in time, are apparent to be thrown together in inextricable confusion. 7. It is singularly sensitive to the slightest external influences, such as sounds or touches, and, 8, it magnifies and distorts them to an almost incredible degree. The physical brain thus is capable of creating sufficient confusion and exaggeration to account for many, but by no means all, dream phenomena. 2. Etheric brain dreams. The etheric brain is even more sensitive during the sleep of the body than it is during ordinary waking consciousness to influences from outside. Whilst the mind is actively engaged, the brain thereby being fully employed, it is practically impervious to the continual impingement of thought from without. But the moment the brain is left idle, the stream of inconsequent chaos begins to pour through it. In the vast majority of people, the thoughts which flow through their brains are in reality not their own thoughts at all, but fragments cast off by other people. Consequently, in sleep life especially, any passing thought which finds something, page 99, congruous to itself in the brain of a sleeper, is seized upon by that brain and appropriated, thus starting a whole train of ideas. Eventually these fade away and the disconnected, purposeless stream begins flowing through the brain again. A point to notice is that, since in the present state of the world's evolution there are likely to be more evil thoughts than good ones floating around, a man with an uncontrolled brain is open to all sorts of temptation which mind and brain control might have spared him. Even when these thought currents are shut out, by the deliberate effort of another person, from the etheric brain of a sleeper, that brain does not remain completely passive, but begins slowly and dreamily to evolve pictures for itself from its store of past memories. 3. Astral dreams. These are simply recollection in the physical brain of the life and activities of the astral body during the sleep of the physical body, to which reference has already been made in the preceding pages. In the case of a fairly well-developed person, the astral body can travel without discomfort to considerable distances from its physical body, can bring more or less definite impressions of places which it may have visited, or of people whom it may have met. In every case the astral body, as already said, is ever intensely impressionable by any thought or suggestion involving desire or emotion, though the nature of the desires which most readily awaken a response in it will, of course, depend on the development of the person and the purity or otherwise of his astral body. The astral body is at all times susceptible to the influences of passing thought currents, and, when the mind is not actively controlling it, it is perpetually receiving these stimuli from without, and eagerly responding to them. During sleep it is even more readily influenced. Consequently, a man who has, for example, entirely destroyed a physical desire, which he may previously have possessed for alcohol, so that in, page 100, waking life he may feel even a definite repulsion for it, may yet frequently dream that he is drinking, and in that dream experience the pleasure of its influence. During the day, the desire of the astral body would be under the control of the will. But when the astral body was liberated in sleep, it escaped to some extent from the domination of the ego, and, responding probably to outside astral influence, its old habit reasserted itself. This class of dream is probably common to many who are making definite attempts to bring their desire nature under the control of the will. It may also happen that a man may have been a drunkard in a past life and still possesses in his astral body some matter drawn thereinto by the vibrations caused in the permanent atom by the drunkenness. Although this matter is not vivified in this life, yet in dreams, the control of the ego being weak, the matter may respond to drink vibrations from without and the man dreams that he drinks. Such dreams, once understood, need not cause distress. Nevertheless, they should be regarded as a warning that there is still present the possibility of the drink craving being reawakened. Ego dreams, much as the nature of the astral body changes as it develops, still greater is the change of the ego, or real man, that inhabits it. Where the astral body is nothing but a floating wreath of mist, the ego is also almost as much asleep as his physical body, being blind to the influences of his own higher plane, and even if some idea belonging to it should manage to reach him, since he has little or no control over his lower bodies, he will be unable to impress the experience on the physical brain. Sleepers may be at any stage from that of complete oblivion up to that of full astral consciousness. And it must be recollected, as already said, that even though there may be many important experiences on the higher planes, the ego may nevertheless be unable to impress them upon the brain, so that there is either no physical memory at all, or only a most confused memory. Page 101. The principal characteristics of the consciousness and experiences of the ego, whether or not they be remembered in the brain, are as follows. 1. The ego's measure of time and space are so entirely different from that which he uses in waking life that it is almost as though neither time nor space existed for him. Many instances are known where in a few moments of time, as we measure it, the ego may have experiences which appear to last for many years, event after event happening in full and circumstantial detail. 2. The ego possesses the faculty, or the habit, of instantaneous dramatization. Thus a physical sound or a touch may reach the ego, not through the usual nerve mechanism, but directly, a fraction of a second before even it reaches the physical brain. That fraction of a second is sufficient for the ego to construct a kind of drama or series of scenes leading up to and culminating in the event which awakens the physical body. The brain confuses the subjective dream and the objective event, and therefore imagines itself to have actually lived through the events of the dream. This habit, however, seems to be peculiar to the ego which, so far as spirituality is concerned, is still comparatively undeveloped. As the ego develops spiritually, he rises beyond these graceful sports of his childhood. The man who has attained continuous consciousness is so fully occupied with higher plane work that he devotes no energy to this dramatization, and consequently this class of dream ceases for him. 3. The ego possesses also to some extent the faculty of prevision, being sometimes able to see in advance events which are going to happen, or rather which may happen unless steps are taken to prevent them, and to impress the same on the physical brain. Many instances are recorded of such prophetic or warning dreams. In some cases the warning may be heeded, the necessary steps taken, and the foreseen result either modified or entirely avoided. Page 102, 4, the ego, when out of the body during sleep, appears to think in symbols, an idea, which down here would require many words to be expressed, is perfectly conveyed to him by a single symbolical image. If such a symbolic thought is impressed upon the brain, and remembered in waking consciousness, the mind may itself translate it into words. On the other hand, it may come through merely as a symbol, untranslated, and so may cause confusion. In dreams of this nature, it seems that each person usually has a system of symbology of his own. Thus water may signify approaching trouble, pearls may be a sign of tears, and so forth. If a man wishes to have useful dreams, that is, to be able to reap in his waking consciousness the benefit of what his ego may learn during sleep, there are certain steps he should take to bring about this result. First, it is essential that he should form the habit of sustained and concentrated thought during ordinary waking life. A man who has absolute control of his thoughts will always know exactly what he is thinking about, and why. He will also find that the brain, thus trained to listen to the promptings of the ego, will remain quiescent when not in use, and will decline to receive or respond to casual currents from the surrounding ocean of thought. The man will thus be more likely to receive influences from the higher planes, where insight is keener and judgment truer than they can ever be on the physical plane. It should scarcely be necessary to add that the man should also be complete master of at least his lower passions. By a very elementary act of magic, a man may shut out from his etheric brain the rush of thoughts which impinge upon it from without. To this end, he should, when lying down to sleep, picture his aura, and will strongly that its outer surface shall become a shell to protect him from outside influences. The auric matter will obey his thought, and form the shell. This step is of appreciable value towards the desired end. Page 103. The great importance of fixing the last thought, before falling to sleep, on high and noble things, has already been mentioned. It should be practiced regularly by those who wish to bring their dreams under control. It may be useful here to add the Hindu terms for the four states of consciousness. Jagrat is the ordinary waking consciousness. Svapna is the dream consciousness, working in the astral body, and able to impress its experiences upon the brain. Sushupti is the consciousness working in the mental body, and not able to impress its experiences on the brain. Tatariya is a state of trance, the consciousness working in the buddhic vehicle, being so far separated from the brain that it cannot readily be recalled by outer means. These terms, however, are used relatively, and vary according to the context. Thus, in one interpretation of Jagrat, the physical and astral planes are combined, the seven subdivisions corresponding to the four conditions of physical matter, and the three broad divisions of astral matter mentioned on page 148. For further elucidation, the student is referred to an Introduction to Yoga, by Annie Besant, page 16, at SEC, and also to A Study in Consciousness, where waking consciousness is defined as that part of the total consciousness which is working through the outermost vehicle. Page 104. Chapter 9. Continuity of Consciousness. As we have seen, for a man to pass in unbroken consciousness from one vehicle to another, for example, from the physical to the astral, or vice versa, it is a requisite that the links between the bodies should be developed. Most men are not conscious of these links, and the links are not actively vivified, being in a condition similar to that of rudimentary organs in the physical body. They have to be developed by use, and are made to function by the man fixing his attention upon them and using his will. The will sets free and guides Kundalini, but unless the preliminary purification of the vehicles is first thoroughly accomplished, Kundalini is a destructive instead of a vivifying energy. Hence the insistence, by all occult teachers, on the necessity of purification before true yoga is practiced. When a man has rendered himself fit to be helped in vivifying the links, such assistance will inevitably come to him as a matter of course, from those who are ever seeking opportunities to aid the earnest and unselfish aspirant. Then, one day, the man will find himself slipping out of the physical body while he is wide awake, and without any break in consciousness he discovers himself to be free. With practice the passage from vehicle to vehicle becomes familiar and easy. The development of the links bridges the gulf between physical and astral consciousness, so that there is perfect continuity of consciousness. The student thus has not only to learn to see correctly on the astral plane, but also to translate accurately the memory of what he has seen from the astral to the physical brain, and to assist him in this he is trained to carry his consciousness without break from the, page 105, physical plane to the astral and mental and back again, for until that can be done there is always a possibility that his recollections may be partially lost or distorted during the blank intervals which separate his periods of consciousness on the various planes. When the power of bringing over the consciousness is perfectly acquired, the pupil will have the advantage of the use of all the astral faculties, not only while out of the body during sleep or trance, but also while fully awake in ordinary physical life. In order that the physical waking consciousness should include astral consciousness, it is necessary that the pituitary body should be further evolved, and that the fourth spirally in the atoms should be perfected. In addition to the method of moving the consciousness from one subplane to another, of the same plane, from, for example, the astral atomic to the lowest subplane of the mental, there is also another line of connection which may be called the atomic shortcut. If we picture the atomic subplanes of astral, mental, etc., as lying side by side along a rod, the other subplanes may be pictured as hanging from the rod in loops, as though a piece of string were wound loosely round the rod. Obviously, then, to pass from one atomic subplane to another one could move by a shortcut along the rod, or down and up again through the hanging loops which symbolize the lower subplanes. The normal processes of our thinking come steadily down through the subplanes, but flashes of genius, illuminative ideas, come through the atomic subplanes only. There is also a third possibility connected with the relation of our planes with the cosmic planes, but this is too abstruse to be dealt with in a work which purports to deal only with the astral plane and its phenomena. Merely to obtain continuity of consciousness between the physical and the astral planes is, of course, quite, page 106, insufficient in itself to restore memory of past lives. For this a much higher development is required, into the nature of which it is not necessary to enter. A man who has thus acquired complete mastery over the astral body may, of course, leave the physical body, not only during sleep, but at any time he chooses, and go to a distant place, etc. Mediums and sensitives project their astral bodies unconsciously, when they go into trance, but usually on coming out of trance there is no brain memory of the experiences acquired. Trained students are able to project the astral body consciously and to travel to great distances from the physical body, bringing back with them full and detailed memory of all the impressions they have gained. An astral body thus projected may be seen by persons who are sensitive or who may chance to be temporarily in an abnormal nervous condition. There are on record many cases of such astral visitations by a dying person near the time of death, the approach of dissolution having loosened the principles so as to make the phenomenon possible for people who were unable at any other time to perform the feat. See also page 50 for a similar phenomenon produced by a thought form. The astral body is also set free in many cases of disease. Inactivity of the physical body is a condition of such astral journeys. A man may, if he knows how to set about it, slightly densify his astral body by drawing into it, from the surrounding atmosphere, particles of physical matter, and thus materialize sufficiently to become physically visible. This is the explanation of many cases of apparitions, where a person, physically absent, has been seen by friends with their ordinary physical sight. Page 107. Chapter 12. Death and the Desire Elemental. At death, the consciousness withdraws from the dense physical body into the etheric double for a short time, usually a few hours, and then passes into the astral body. Death thus consists of a process of unrobing or unsheathing. The ego, the immortal part of man, shakes off from itself, one after the other, its outer casings, first the dense physical, then the etheric double, then even the astral body, as we shall see later. In almost every case the actual passing away appears to be perfectly painless, even after a long illness involving terrible suffering. The peaceful look on the face of the dead is strong evidence in favor of this statement, and it is also borne out by the direct testimony of most of those who have been questioned on the point immediately after death. At the actual moment of death, even when death is sudden, a man sees the whole of his past life marshaled before him, in its minutest detail. In a moment he sees the whole chain of causes which been at work during his life. He sees and now understands himself as he really is, unadorned by flattery or self-deception. He reads his life, remaining as a spectator, looking down upon the arena he is quitting. The condition of consciousness immediately after the moment of death is usually a dreamy and peaceful one. There will also be a certain period of unconsciousness, which may last only for a moment, though often it is a few minutes, or several hours, and sometimes even days or weeks. The natural attraction between the astral counterpart and the physical body is such that, after death, page 108, the astral counterpart, from force of habit, retains its accustomed form. Consequently, a man's physical appearance will still be preserved after death almost unchanged. Almost, because in view of the fact that astral matter is very readily molded by thought, a man who habitually thinks of himself after death as younger than he actually was at the time of death will probably assume a somewhat younger appearance. Very soon after death, in most cases, an important change takes place in the structure of the astral body, owing to the action of the desire elemental. Much of the matter of the astral body is composed of elemental essence, see page 6. This essence is living, though not intelligent, and for the time it is cut off from the general mass of astral essence. Blindly, instinctively, and without reason it seeks its own ends and shows great ingenuity in obtaining its desires and in furthering its evolution. Evolution for it is a descent into matter, its aim being to become a mineral monad. Its object in life, therefore, is to get as near to the physical as it can, and to experience as many of the coarser vibrations as possible. It neither does or could know anything of the man in whose astral body it is for the time living. It desires to preserve its separate life, and feels that it can do so only by means of its connection with the man. It is conscious of the man's lower mind, and realizes that the more mental matter it can entangle with itself, the longer will be its astral life. On the death of the physical body, knowing that the term of its separated life is limited, and that the man's astral death will more or less quickly follow, in order to make the man's astral body last as long as possible, it rearranges its matter in concentric rings or shells, the coarsest outside. From the point of view of the desire elemental, this is good policy, because the coarsest matter can hold together longest and best stand friction. The rearranged astral body is called the yatana, or suffering body, in the case of a very evil man in, page 109, whose astral body there is a preponderance of the coarsest matter, it is called the dhruvam or strong body. The rearrangement of the astral body takes place over the surface of the counterpart of the physical body, not over the surface of the ovoid which surrounds it. The effect is to prevent the free and full circulation of astral matter which usually takes place in the astral body. In addition, the man is able to respond only to those vibrations which are received by the outermost layer of his astral body. The man is thus shut up, as it were, in a box of astral matter, being able to see and hear things of the lowest and coarsest plane only. Although living in the midst of high influences and beautiful thought forms, he would be almost entirely unconscious of their existence, because the particles of his astral body which could respond to those vibrations are shut in where they cannot be reached. Consequently, also, being able to sense only the coarsest matter in the astral bodies of other people, and being entirely unconscious of his limitations, he would assume that the person he was looking at possessed only the unsatisfactory characteristics which he would be able to perceive. Since he can see and feel only what is lowest and coarsest, the men around him appear to be monsters of vice. Under these circumstances, it is little wonder that he considers the astral world a hell. The rearrangement of the astral body by the desire elemental does not in any way affect the recognizability of the form within the ovoid, though the natural changes which take place tend on the whole to make the form grow somewhat fainter and more spiritual in appearance as time passes on, for reasons which will presently be made clear. In course of time, the outermost shell or ring disintegrates. The man then becomes able to respond to the vibrations of the next higher level of the astral plane, and thus rises to the next sub-plane, and so, page 110, on from one sub-plane to another. His stay on each sub-plane will, of course, correspond to the amount and activity of the matter in his astral body belonging to that sub-plane. When we speak of a man rising from one sub-plane to another, he need not necessarily move in space at all, he rather transfers his consciousness from one level to another. In the case of a man with a rearranged astral body, the focus of his consciousness shifts from the outer shell to the one next within it. The man thus gradually becomes unresponsive to the vibrations of one order of matter and answers instead to those of a higher order. Thus one world with its scenery and its inhabitants would seem to fade slowly away from his view, while another world would dawn upon him. As the shell usually disintegrates gradually, the man thus finds the counterparts of physical objects growing dimmer and dimmer, while thought forms become more and more vivid to him. If during this process he meets another man at intervals, he will imagine that that man's character is steadily improving, merely because he is himself become able to appreciate the higher vibrations of that character. The rearrangement of the astral body, in fact, constantly interferes with a man's true and full vision of his friends at all stages of their astral life. This process of rearrangement of the astral body, which takes place with most people, can be prevented by the man setting his will to oppose it. In fact, Anyone who understands the conditions of the astral plane should altogether decline to permit the rearrangement of the astral body by the desire elemental. The particles of the astral body will then be kept intermingled, as in life, and in consequence, instead of being confined to one astral subplane at a time, the man will be free of all the subplanes, according to the constitution of his astral body.